That's us. That's all our voices. Everyone sounds fine and fighting fit. So let's introduce the podcast. Hello, nice. And welcome to Nothing to Fear, a weekly horror movie podcast hosted by three Canadians and real-life friends. My name is Billy Schultz. I am your host, and I'm joined, as always, by two of the best-sounding podcasters in the business, Luke Mason and Alex Wan. Luke, I apologize. I'm poking a little bit of fun at you. You have a bit of a cold today, but other than that, how are you doing?
You know what? It's all a facade. I just realized we're doing the movie we're doing today is very visceral and viscous. So I wanted to have a voice that reached peak viscosity for all listeners.
Oh, that's so kind of you. Thank you very much.
Sometimes life imitates art, imitates not art.
Podcasting. Thank you so much for joining.
I sound worse than I am.
Yeah.
I'll put it to you that way.
It's very husky. It's very, very husky. If people like it, listeners, let us know. Do you like Luke's new voice? We'll encourage him to
get
strain his
often.
Vocal cords every week so we can maintain this going forward. No, it's good to see you. And we are also joined by Alex Wan. How are you doing today, Alex?
I'm good. Yeah. I think my voice is fine, but my other body parts are a little tired.
Nothing's going to keep you down.
My knee, you know, it's been banging on the table the whole time. Yeah, I'm good. I'm happy to be here. Glad to have something to force me to be up and about.
Because
that is an important road to recovery. Because
yes.
My soju runneth over.
For listeners, at the time of recording, Alex has just got off a night of, I will assume, is raucous karaoke. How was it? Was it a good time?
It was a good time. I had a good time. Yes. Yeah. I actually,
I miss a good
you know
karaoke.
What, I cannot drink as much as I used to, so it's like, it's not as bad as, like, I don't know, 5 years ago? So, it's like...
Is that when we started going to karaoke? Was it already 5 years ago?
Probably.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Damn. Wild. What'd you sing? Give us your track.
On my track?
It was the Alex Wan special. Yeah.
Oh, I did a nice Breaking Free duet, you know, High School Musical.
Nice.
That was good. The machine, or... I don't know. None of us could read Korean, so it's like they had these new kind of tablet thingies where, you know, I think I reserved a song, but it puts the song on repeat all night. So all night it was like Taylor Swift 22 on repeat until you canceled it. But then even if you cancel it, you start another song. Once that song ends, it goes back to that song. So it was just like, I don't know what's happening.
They're just like, everyone is going to sing 22. It's fine.
Yeah.
Don't worry
so
about
22,
it.
Breaking Free. I think there was another one that was on repeat all night. So it's like, I was kind of sick of the first 8 seconds of that song.
Fair enough. My go-to was always 99 Red Balloons by, I think, Goldfinger, something.
Did you do it in German?
I did the German part because I was taking German lessons at the time on my phone. And so I learned the words. I didn't do it good because I was always like more than a little bit tipsy. And also, Two Princes, Spin Doctors, just because that's a good one.
Of course.
What's your favorite karaoke track, Luke? I mean, I know, but the listener maybe doesn't.
Well, so my personal favorite, they never have at those private Korean places in Calgary that we would go to, but my number one go-to is Hungry Like the Wolf by Duran Duran, because I have a whole pantomime to it.
I've seen
it's
it.
It's actually it's a song that lends itself well to theater, I suppose. And so that's the go-to. And then I also have some nice backups in Savage Garden and Third Eye Blind. But in terms of galaxy karaoke in Calgary, it's definitely Tub Thumping by Chumbawamba done literally. And I saw that I gotta say, it was a special video because our mutual friend Jacqueline sent me a video of Alex being the current, carrying the mantle of Tub Thumping. And granted, you did it not on the floor, you did it on the seating area, but nevertheless, there was just pure happiness on his face in that video. mixed with some alcohol, mixed with some soju.
Two intact ACLs as well.
Yeah, exactly.
But Luke, you can't hold that against him. You've been going pro on Tub Thumping for years. Alex is starting up. You always, you know, you got to walk before you can run. And so, you know, give
I hope
a couple
you stretched, Alex. You got to stretch.
Thank you for paving the path.
Yes.
Thank you for, If he's Chumbawamba'd farther, it's only because he did so from sitting on your shoulders.
Yes. If I could tub thump, if I appear to be able to tub thump better than anyone, it's because I've tub thumped on other tub thumping shoulders.
There you go.
That did that long before me. But that's kind of like, that if I'm not mistaken, that's kind of like the story of humanity.
Yeah. All right. Well, all right. Should we talk about a horror movie? Should we do that? I think we probably should. I'm enjoying the chat, though. And but yeah, well, let's down to the serious work of watching a scary movie and then talking about that scary movie. For this week, it's my pick for the film, and I have picked a 2006 film from filmmaker James Gunn before his Guardians of the Galaxy days, and we are going to be watching Slither, which is one that I have not seen. Have either of you seen this movie?
No, I haven't seen it. I haven't really heard of it either. Like, I think, obviously, you know, James Gunn is a big name now. So, you know, I've looked back on the movies that he's done and been like, oh, okay, like, there's, he didn't, like, start off big. So I think I've maybe seen the name, but I've never looked into it, never really thought about watching it until today. So, should be a nice surprise. Knowing James Gunn, I think we will get some quips. Is that a word? Yeah, some
quips. Yep.
Some quips, some jokes, and a whole lot of fun. I think it'll be a whole lot of fun.
Yes, it is billed as more of a comedy horror, I think. I also only knew it by the name reputation, and of course when Guardians of the Galaxy was being made, they talked about James Gunn in context with, like, oh, the guy who directed Slither. And I was like, well, that doesn't sound interesting because that's a horror movie. And yuck, no thank you. I'm never going to watch horror movies. Here's me eating my words all these years later. But I did see some, like, when you Google Slither to find, like, where it's streaming or something, a lot of the images that pop up kind of show still shots from the movie. And it looks like this one could be real gross. I am familiar with the poster, which is like a woman in a bathtub, and there's just like all these red sort of wormy looking things all around, and one is kind of climbing up the side of the tub. So that seems like it could be gross. I'm expecting some like gross out stuff, and yeah, hopefully some of that James Gunn humor that we've seen in his later work. But have you heard of this one, seen this one, Luke? What do you got?
No, I hadn't even heard of it until last week when it was your
selection. See, that surprises me. That surprises me that you haven't even heard of it. Because you, I have a lot of people in my life who, like, don't know a lot about movies, but I've always counted on you, Luke, to be like, you know, getting what I'm putting down on things. So it's rare that I stump you on a movie.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess there's a lot of movies.
At least five.
Yeah. So I
oh, really
I don't
know. Name
I
them.
Oh, you like movies? Name all of them.
The Simpsons movie. The South Park movie.
It's doing it. It's doing it.
All TV show movies.
Let's see. X-Files movie.
Oh, yeah. Didn't they make two or three? Yeah, yep. Two. Yeah, we're already at four.
Anyway.
Serenity.
Anyway, okay. What do you got for a Slither?
I don't have anything. I mean, I feel like this movie's going to be like campy. Very campy and silly, and I guess for these kind of movies that are obviously like creature feature type horror comedies or maybe even comedy horrors, because I have a very hard time believing there's going to be anything scary about this movie. My barometer is the movie Eight-Legged Freaks. I don't know if either of you have seen that one.
That's with Dan Arquette, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I feel like that movie is kind of like, with my tongue in my cheek, I say the high watermark of like shitty awesome movies with crazy like unlikely animal type things coming after you. So it's James Gunn, so it'll probably be funny and the cast is good, but I'm gonna kind of see like, okay, where is this in relation to the quote-unquote pantheon of these kind of movies, which to me the best one I've enjoyed the most, and maybe there's some nostalgia attached to this, Eight-Legged Freaks.
Right. So it's like, like, yeah, Eight-Legged Freaks, Sharknado.
Yeah. Although
Piranha,
I've never,
like those ones, yeah.
I don't know. Like, even though it's totally unrealistic, Eight-Legged Freaks has a veneer of possibility in a way Sharknado doesn't. So, like, I'm gonna see what the kind of, like, I'm curious to know what the motivating force will be behind these worm-like creatures. Like, are they just all of a sudden evolution... punctuated evolution where like there was five and now there's 5 million in one day and they're just hungry?
Right.
Or is there like a motivating force behind them, like some malicious mustache twirling person?
Did the worms and tremors have a motivation, or they were just like...
They're just hungry.
Well, we also talked about like
sweet, sweet bacon.
We also talked about like where the hell were they for the last always?
That's true.
before they showed up.
True. Yeah.
Like, how are they not found? They're so big. But
global warming is what caused them to come out.
But there wasn't global warming back then.
That's true.
Oh no, you're right. Yes, I agree with you, Luke. Though that like, is this an alien? Is this just like why are these creatures here? And all of a sudden they're causing a ruckus in the year 2006. And yeah, I'm excited. I will say I'm excited going into it. The cast looks amazing. Elizabeth Banks, Michael Rooker, Nathan Fillion. Like, it seems like it's very much like this like comedy sci-fi sort of who's who from that era. Like Nathan Fillion in 2006, like that was kind of like the zenith of Nathan Fillion. And so I think it's going to be enjoyable. I hope it's a good fun time. It's streaming on Shudder. If you have a Shudder account and you want to watch it, you can do so. So I think yeah, any other speculation we can talk about after the film. I guess it wouldn't be speculation at that point. It can just be questioning and having a conversation about it. And we're going to get lemon based teas for all of our voices, soothe all our voices, and we'll be back in a second. But before the trailer, just remember, folks, check out doesthedogdie.com for any triggering parts. I will also make a special point to add a little recorded thing if there is anything that's really, really tricky that we talk about. So listen for that, and there will be spoilers for this movie from 2006. So see you, folks, in a minute.
When you marry someone, you promise to love them forever.
Baby.
No matter how much they might change.
Brian? Baby, what happened to your face?
It's just a bee sting.
From Universal Pictures.
Treat is sick or something.
Comes a film so shocking.
We got a real problem here.
So disgusting.
Don't let him in your mouth!
No! It will change the face of horror.
Mary? For better or worse?
Much worse.
Chick is hard. Go on.
Something's wrong with me.
I can't believe there's a post-credit sting in the movie.
It's wild.
I missed it.
I really thought they wrapped it up at the end there.
Yeah, it was no loose ends, no questions, unanswered. Just perfect filmmaking.
The only loose ends were literal.
Yeah. Alex, read us the Wikipedia entry, absolutely, if you will.
Slither is a 2006 American science fiction black comedy horror film written and directed by James Gunn in his directorial debut. Produced by Paul Brooks and Eric Newman, the film stars Nathan Fillion, Elizabeth Banks, Tanya Salnier, Greg Henry, and Michael Rooker. The film is set in a small town in South Carolina that becomes invaded by a malevolent alien parasite.
Oh boy. Oh boy. I'm going to dive right in because I picked this one for it's our birthday month. We can pick what we want to. And holy moly, I had kind of an amazing blast with this movie. And I can't wait to talk to you about it because it was, for me, it was completely bonkers. This movie knew it was a riff on an 80s B science fiction creature feature movie. It knew that from frame one and just kept going. And there were times when I laughed out loud. There were times when I was a little bit startled. Whoever predicted that it wouldn't be very scary was right. It wasn't very scary. It was just visceral and gross and full of little homages to other horror movies. And I had a great time and I can't wait to talk to you about it. So that's my quick and dirty sort of dive in before we we get going. So, Luke, what did you think of Slither 2006?
Yeah, I mean, this movie is a total romp. It's honesty in advertising, I think this movie could best be summed up as. Oh, like, you read that synopsis, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's exactly what this movie is.
Exactly.
And
what
it's,
you get.
It's funny. It's quite, there's some really funny quips in it. The leads are great. It's like the opposite of I don't know what I expected. So it'll be fun to talk about all that. Yes, it's a riff on all of those body horror and visceral type movies, and the prosthetics are good, and the performances are cheesy, but they're meant to be, so it's funny. Maybe just the kind of like horror perspective. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's the recency bias because we just watched it, but I might nominate this movie as the least scary of any movie we've done thus far on the podcast.
I can see that.
But
yeah.
I would have to also like look through the back catalog to see which other ones were like that. But like, there's an element of this movie that's similar to Cabin in the Woods in its temperament. But I found Cabin in the Woods scarier than this movie even. Mm. And so it's gross, it's funny, it's stupid, and that was the goal of it, so mission accomplished, James Gunn. Mm-hmm. I will say, I got some vibes from Guardian of the Galaxy in some of the, like, creature parts with, like, Chris Pratt, I don't know, kicking that, like, mouse thing on the planet, I remember, and then also the, like, vision that the one girl has of the planet. The alien planet. I was like, oh, there's a CGI Guardians of the Galaxy feel to this, so you can see like the kind of progenitor
the
of
fingerprints
that. Exactly. And also, like, I like finding director actor connections, because it's like, obviously James Gunn knew Michael Rooker before, so you know, don't yawn if I do, right? Like that kind of thing.
Yeah,
so that was all fun.
Yeah, very 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 much like the DNA of James Gunn, of an earlier evolutionary lens, with like the pop music sort of playing over something that's like where a pop song shouldn't go, and that's kind of really exploded with Guardians of the Galaxy, and then like, of course, other people have tried to parody it to greater or lesser effect, but it was just kind of nice to see the beginnings of the James Gunn aesthetic, I guess. And also, I forgot to add this in my synopsis, it is 95 minutes long, and it is a perfect length. So
yeah,
I'm going to go let the cat out of the room that's scratching at the door. So, Alex, tell us what you thought.
Yeah, this movie is a ton of fun to watch. It was a good time. I got a lot of Malignant feelings from this, because like in Malignant, when I was watching, I was like, oh my God, this is happening. Like, wow, that's so gross. And like, but it was like, I kept wanting to watch more. And I felt a lot of that in Slither. It was kind of similar in the way that they, like, it's just gross and visceral, but it was, I kept wanting to watch more, and it kept me, like, in my seat. And then, yeah, this movie is just, like, funny. It has that, hey, instead of Chris Pratt, it's going to be Nathan Fillion saying that one-liner. But it works, because Nathan Fillion he's just so charismatic, and he's funny. Yeah, so this was just, like, it was a really basic plot. And it was just a fun time the whole way through. And the one unique thing I quite liked about it was how all the zombies, because they all shared the same brain and same memories, so they're all like, no, I'm your husband, Starla. That was like really fun for me.
Yeah.
And it was like a nice little kind of different change, because this is really a zombie, it's like a zombie body horror kind of thing. And, you know, zombies are kind of boring to me now, but you know, the humor of this, of like, you know, the zombies sharing the same brain, kept it really like interesting for me. So yeah, this was good. I liked it.
Yeah, I like that the zombie aspect of it, which you say this is a zombie film. I would argue that it's half a zombie film and half a body horror creature feature film, and kind of blended together, if you will. But the fact that in most zombie movies, they're like unified by some sort of like undefined desire to consume flesh, these zombies were, they just all wanted to be back with their wife, and that was that was a funny twist. So I thought, yeah, I mean, this movie had me laughing, had me cheering, and there's so much squelching in this movie. I'm on the record as not liking the caption of squelching, and this one is, in addition to maybe being the least scary, the most times the word squelching came on screen.
Even more than Hellraiser 2.
I think I don't know. We were talking about this. It was like, this is like on a level of grossness with Hellraiser 2, but because it wasn't like, I don't know, as bloody, if that makes sense. Like, the fact that it wasn't just like human blood, it was just like weird slime and goo and like acid and like, I want to say super over the top, but if anybody would argue that Hellraiser is under the top at all, it's... Yeah. I don't want to be friends with that person.
I think the difference for me was, like, Hellraiser was really gross, but it was trying to be serious. And this one, it was, like, it's really gross as well, but I know they're having a good time. I know they're trying to make everything fun and funny, and it's... I'm less squeamish to that when I know it's, like, in good fun. I don't know if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That makes sense, yeah. Because there is a juxtaposition about this, like... obviously disgusting, gross, like, body horror thing. And there's a scene sort of around the climax of the first act of the movie where Brenda, who has been, like, impregnated with all these worms, is just this, like, giant violet Beauregard monster. And Nathan Fillion is talking to her. He's like, hey, Brenda, you don't look so good. How are you feeling? And she's just like, oh, you know, I'm hungry. It's just like they're completely skating past the fact that she is spherical and like 20 to 40 feet in diameter, and it's just like, okay, this is the type of movie we're getting, and it's just Nathan Fillion,
actually,
I mean, great.
It's funny, we were talking about Halo before we started recording, because in the first Halo, spoilers for Halo Combat Evolved, I guess, there's a scene where Master Chief has to go back and find Captain Keyes, but he's been incorporated into the Flood, the parasitic thing, and they actually, the Flood is a little bit reminiscent of the grossness of this movie, and so he has to like reach into the Captain Keyes's face and pull out his like neuro thing so they can start the spaceship, and it's like that scene is Captain Keyes's face in a blob.
Yeah,
you know, it's like and just like Brenda's face in a blob. So I was like, oh, this is actually like the second last level in Halo.
there you go.
I felt a lot of the Thing in this as well, which was cool, especially, you know, Grant's big blob at the very end with all the other things trying to conglomerate with it. Yep, that's the word. Yeah, it was just like limbs and sticky stuff, and it was blobness,
tentacles, and
I think it's probably worth pointing out early in this recording that this being a James Gunn film, it's just saturated with pop culture, right? So that's kind of his signature on a lot of his stuff, is this kind of like meta-awareness of what other things are popular in the world at the same time. So Nathan Fillion is obviously famous for sci-fi TV shows, and the way that this kind of worm-like creature operates, it's similar to the Borg from Star Trek. So even though I know it wasn't Star Trek that Nathan Fillion is in, it's just still kind of like associative with these sci-fi shows. There's like, I'm going to predict we have a number of items in our episode today that are like, oh, it reminded me of this cultural motif. It reminded me of this cultural token, you know, or totem or something like that. So I just, that's obviously for the three of us quite enjoyable.
Yeah. And the big one, the first one I noticed, and then I found another one when I was online. I wanted to look up what other sort of Easter eggs I might have missed. But the first one I noticed is obviously the mayor's name. The mayor of the town is McCready, which is Kurt Russell's character in The Thing. Right. And so I was like, that has got to be on purpose. There's no way it's not on purpose. Like, McCready's not just like a common name you'd pick out for no reason. So the fact that it was a big body horror and parasite and you don't know who's who, and having McCready be there was great. I also found out that the farm that they hear about, the Cassavet farm, or Cassavetes, I don't know, I think I may be saying it wrong. Apparently is an homage to the family in Rosemary's Baby. So also
there you
a scary
go.
One. And then not totally Slither related, but in the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie, when they are visiting the collector, there's a case that has a bunch of Slither worms inside.
Nice.
There you go.
That this movie is officially canonical with the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
And the least subtle homage is the bathtub scene from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Like, yeah, of course.
It's
yeah.
like almost, it's almost a shot for shot remake yeah. of that scene. And like, what's her name? Well, what was her name? I
in
totally am.
Nightmare?
No, in this movie.
The tub girl?
Oh, Lydia? No.
Yeah, what was her name?
Kylie?
Kylie. Kylie? Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah,
she
Kylie.
Like kind of resembles Nancy a little bit from that.
She's got fancier nails though.
Yeah. So it's just like, oh my gosh, this movie's way more fun to watch with that kind of like background knowledge of other horror movies.
Yeah. And yeah. then also the amount of feet that we saw, I was like, did Tarantino direct this?
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. This one, like, it felt like it knew what it wanted to be immediately. And Alex, you say this one is maybe not, did you say maybe it's not like a horror movie? Like, it's not horrifying in that it's scary, but it is gross. And I wonder yeah. if like the idea of the horror genre that we've talked about this a lot, but like more and more I'm thinking there's like other ways to expand what the word horror encompasses and to like be horrified by what you're seeing, but not like scared of what is happening is maybe just a side definition of horror. And like, cause I don't know if I would, Tremors was kind of like this as well. It was gross and disgusting, but also funny. And we were like, is this a horror movie? This one's definitely like more cheeky and goofy. But so this one, if we called Tremors a horror movie, which we did because it's for the podcast, then I feel like yeah. we call this one a horror movie too.
I think this movie's even cheekier than Tremors. So
oh, for sure.
So it's like, where would you ever draw? I don't know. Like, maybe it's impossible and it's just up for blowhards like us to dance all around it. But like, would you ever, could there be a line drawn where it's like, this movie's way too cheeky to ever be even associated with horror movies, other than like, to me, this is like a love letter to horror more than a horror film.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, here's the thing is, you know, we're trying, hey, there we go. Let's stop trying to like classify things into a binary of, is this horror? Or is this not horror? Because yeah. they're, you know, hard binaries don't exist except in computing. So, you know, it's just, it's a spectrum. It's along a comedy axis and a horror axis, and you can plot
110011, Billy. Nice.
How dare you? My mother is a saint. All right.
Sorry, Anne. That wasn't my ostensible attempt.
There we go. 110011 is ostensibly in binary. No, it's not.
Nice.
Maybe? I don't know what it is. Somebody tell me. So, okay, let's talk about the opening of this movie. Like, how did you feel when the movie opened? Did you know that this was this movie was the type of movie it was going to be upon the opening frames, I guess is the question I'm asking?
It answered pretty much all the questions that I was going to have about the movie right in the opening scene. It's like, okay, so there's like a meteor landing on Earth, so I guess whatever dangerous entity or villain is going to be in this movie, it's from space. And
yeah,
I'm gonna assume, based off of my cultural awareness of things on space landing on Earth and this being a horror movie, quote unquote, I'm like, okay, so whatever is on this asteroid is probably gonna wreak havoc. And all those things were like answered in the first like scene, which left me, actually, I really like that, because you know, there's movies where like you have like exposition dump 2/3 of the movie in, and it's like, and I guess there was a little bit of that with Kylie being like in the mind of the alien, but I wasn't sitting here questioning the motives and why and like how and what, you know. I was just like able to enjoy everything as it was happening, because all the questions that I had about this alien are kind of answered. Like, I don't need to know why is this alien trying to take over the Earth? Well, it's obvious, right? It's an alien. It just wants to spread around, I don't know, the galaxy and stuff. And I didn't have to be like, where did this thing come from? It's like, oh, I already know. It came from space and it landed on Earth from a meteor and it took over Grant. That's it. That's all.
Grant.
Yeah. A name so nice, he got it twice.
A+ character name. Grant.
I just, like, it's so cruel.
Yeah,
his parents are so cruel.
Right? What's our last name? Grant. What do we want to name our child? Well, I really like our last name, so
they knew GG would become a common saying.
I just love how well it sets up the town of Wheelsy like North Carolina or South Carolina. Like, it's just like the smallest town. The biggest event of the social season is the deer cheer, like the start of deer hunting season. And it's just like, okay, yeah, this is like a very, very small town, sleepy town. We get the scene of them like tracking the speed of birds flying past because there's like, there's nobody even speeding on the highway for the cops to do anything. And yeah, I just, I thought it did all those like setups to make it seem like a cheesy B creature feature movie super well. Like, a, again, a great homage to those other movies, of which we haven't, I guess we haven't really watched many on the show, but just like the fact that I've seen this parodied enough to understand that at one point in time, this was like how you set up a horror movie or a creature feature movie was just great. All the actors did an amazing job. Even Michael Rooker, who looked like he must have had to go through a ton of prosthetics.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably why he had a shaved head. Like, it's like, I don't want to have to put a bald cap on.
Yeah. Totally.
Make this easier.
Well, now that we've watched A Quiet Place 2, I can be totally open and forthcoming about this observation that this is now the second movie we've seen on this podcast with a main character from The Office having to deal with an alien invasion. So that's awesome.
We got a good Jenna Fisher cameo.
It made sense she was in it, though. Wasn't she like married to James
Gunn? They were married at the
time. Oh, was she? I didn't know yeah. that.
And that's cool. It was just great. And I mean, Pam is probably like the most wholesome character on The Office, so she's kind of like the grounded, no nonsense but also a sense of humor. So it's like, I don't know. I think she's like the glue that holds that show together without from it spiraling into total absurdity and unwatchability. And so I just it's so fun to see these kind of earlier roles. And I just think it's, you know, pop culture observation 4,212 of this film is that now it stands with A Quiet Place as alien movies involving lead Office characters.
I hope for Jenna Fisher's sake, I hope she's had a role where she's not like a secretary, like, because she was kind of like the secretary at the police station. I don't know her filmography that much aside from these two pieces.
She's a figure skater in Blades of Glory.
That's right.
Was she? Okay, there you go. I'm sorry, I guess I don't have an encyclopedic knowledge of Blades of Glory like you do. Okay, so there you go. Wish granted, I guess. I loved that Corb Lund was the band in the bar. Just like, this is like a very Alberta thing, because he's an Alberta boy, and I think he's... Yeah, I don't know. I've heard some stories about Corb Lund that I will not say on air because they may or may not be slanderous alleged stories. It was just funny because I heard the singing, I heard the voice, and I was like, that sounds like Corb Lund, and it was. So
nice.
Shout out to Corb Lund and the Hurtin' Albertans.
Sure.
Proud of my province.
Yeah. I mean, just to answer your question, Billy, like, the smartest thing this movie could have done, it did. It was like the most low resolution plot motivating device ever. A comet from outer space lands, alien life form, watch out. Anything trying to get deeper than that is a mistake. So good job, movie.
Yeah. Anything, like, you don't need a big reason for why. Yeah. It's just like, this thing is going to take over the Earth. Either stop it or don't. I liked that there's a scene towards the end where Kylie is talking to Nathan Fillion's character, who's Bill Prady, I think. Yeah. And he's like, what are we going to do? And he's like, probably turn into gross zombies. And like, just the sort of dry, droll sort of affect of like, yeah, we're fucked, we don't really know what we're going to do, was just, yeah, I don't know. It's a really tight film, even though at the end, there's no resolution really. They blow up the creature and all the zombies die. And then I guess just everyone in the town is dead.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah.
Okay. How? I have so many questions for the lives of these characters after.
Another movie that this movie was inspired by, even though the remake is more famous and happened after this movie, so there's a subtle anachronism here, but The Crazies is a great film that got remade in 2010, but like, that's a film of people whose brains get taken over because of a virus, and they're in like the Midwest, so it's like rural, and then everyone dies at the end. So it's like
where everyone
is everyone's dead. So I actually like, I'd love to do The Crazy sometime on this show.
Yeah, that could be fun.
It's a fun movie, but I was just like, oh, that's another like little fingerprint of a horror film in this movie too. Right. Is that one?
And apparently, there's a bunch of other ones that this is like based on, homaged from. Got into a little bit of legal trouble as well, or controversy. This is from Wikipedia. I have it up here. There's a 1986 film called Night of the Creeps, which is like alien slugs that turn people into zombies. Sure. And I guess that the internet kind of went off being like, James Gunn is ripping off this movie from the 80s. But I don't think anything came of it. I don't have any.
You're
going
to have to be more specific than that.
Yeah, right.
I'd like to hear the person who comes up with a, here's an 80s movie that had nothing to do with Slither.
Yeah, right. But apparently, like, yeah, Shivers, The Creeps, The Brood, and some, like, manga as well. It's like, the idea of, like, an alien parasite coming down and infecting people is not new to horror. I actually expected this movie to be more like an Invasion of the Body Snatchers, where it's like you don't notice something's wrong for a while until like it's really wrong. And the fact that they just like from the get-go, they're like, nope, check it out. Here's a big gross slug. Check it out. Michael Rooker is eating a bunch of raw meat and he's got chest tentacles. And like there's no hiding this like guy who's deforming and changing shape. It's just like, oh, okay. And then we don't get the zombie stuff until like midway through the film.
See, that's what I kind of thought was a little bit odd. Not that it was a bad thing. I thought this movie actually started off really slow. Like, it took a long time to ramp up. But it wasn't bad because it was still entertaining the whole time that it was building up. The leads were just, like, they were fun and, you know, the dialogue was funny and the character interactions are interesting enough that it's just, like, I wasn't bored of it. But, like, the reveal of what Grant actually looked like, it didn't happen till like almost halfway through the movie, and we don't find out like the Brenda blob till after that. But yeah. So it took a long time to ramp up, but once it like it hit that point, it was like, all right, now it's time for the body horror stuff. It just like it didn't stop.
Yeah. It really went off, and it like starts with the scene where he's like got her in a chokehold and his arms all bendy, and then he just like runs out of the house and his arm is like flapping around.
Yeah.
It just like felt like he was wearing
it, like
a,
hits like, the door on the way out.
Yeah, it's like bonked into it. It's just like he didn't put his coat on all the way and just like flapped around. And I was just like, that's good. That's really funny. I guess big spoiler alarm for this one, or not spoiler alarm, but trigger warning. Not only does the dog die in this movie, but like all the pets die in this movie. Mm-hmm. This one has a disturbing amount of animal and pet death, and it's just because they're so hungry and they need to eat meat.
Could you hand me that possum down there?
Not a film for vegans. Just a little bit. Just a little bite.
I think one of the best parts about like the actual alien parasite was how similar, like how recognizable it was. It's like you look at this deformed face with like all the extra teeth on the side, and you're like, oh, that's Michael Rooker. Like they really formed this monster to look exactly like Michael Rooker, which yeah. I don't know if it's like maybe an insult to his physical features or not, but it looked really recognizable.
Look,
it's like,
yeah. The fact that it wasn't like completely buried and lost in the prosthetics, that you could tell it was him the whole time and not just 100% a puppet, because I mean, at the end, there's some pretty significant like limbage going on and tentacles, and he's not even really talking at that point, but there's just like a writhing mass of like bodies and heads, and I'm sure more puppeteers than were even on like the Jabba the Hutt puppet from Return of the Jedi, and that had like 14 or something. So mm-hmm. I love seeing cool puppets in horror movies. Like it's such a fun way that like works better than CG, I think, even still. And I think they can do amazing stuff with CG, but like having a practical puppet for an alien in a movie like this is just something that's kind of magical. Speaking of the acting, though, in the movie, the, like, the roles, not only was, like, Michael Rooker and Nathan Fillion, all the A-list cast, all the top-billed cast, I thought everybody turned in a really great performance. Like, the scene in the police station where they're making fun of the mayor for being, like, freaking out over him being a squid, just, I thought that was great. I thought, I'm like, great, I don't have to watch Squid Game now, I've caught up on it, it must be the same. I like the Kylie's little sisters when they were possessed by the zombie. I thought, like, those two actresses did a really great job. Just, like, there, it had no business being as, like, well-acted as it was.
Yeah. For me. For, like, a super campy, non-serious movie, the acting in it made sense. Obviously, there's, like, mm-hmm. the quips and the one-lines, but they all did a really good job with it, and yeah. I don't know, like, the scene at the end where the mayor gets, like, transformed and he's, like, mm-hmm. telling Bill to kill him and, like, he doesn't hesitate for a single second.
Not even for a second, yeah. it would have not been out of place in this movie if they were like, oh my god, you killed the mayor who turned into a zombie, and Bill had a line that was like, oh, he was a zombie? Like, just, like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It felt like it could have gone that way. Because he was so awful and so horrible and on purpose. Like, he's introduced, like, at a red light and he's beeping the horn and calling the guy driving the car a cocksucker. Not okay, by the way. And then there's, like, a person walking their kid outside and they're like, hello, Mr. Mayor. And he's like, oh, hey, how you doing?
And it's so funny. That's such a good setup because it's, like, set up that he's, like, this out-of-towner. Who's like
right.
maybe like a yuppie kind of type of person who doesn't understand rural America, and the person in front of him is like this huge vehicle with tires that are like bigger than the guy's car. So right. it's like the definition of a little dog yapping at a big dog. And then yeah. it actually turns out he's the biggest dog in this town.
But also another good horror movie reference. What is this horror movie reference? 10,865. The fact that, like, a bad mayor in a town, like, very reminiscent of Jaws.
Yeah, for
you
sure.
You know, we didn't have this guy not shutting down the beaches or whatever, but, like, just again, like, a public official who's, like, not in it for the good of the town. He's a tale as old as horror film.
But then again, a good twist on it, because most elected officials, never mind mayors, are, like, trying to they try to be like a little bit sneaky or duplicitous about their awfulness if they are so awful or doing deals, or that, like, at least this guy's out in the open in his terribleness, like, at least he's yeah. like swearing at his citizens and calling them horrible names.
Yeah,
like, you know, like, you gotta he embodies his inner asshole in a way that a lot of other elected officials try to shy away from, their inner asshole.
But I also right. like that he was, like, in the midst of the action and, like, actually wanting to help out, I guess, in his own way. Because, like,
true.
The trope is, like, the cowardly mayor that never, like, that wants the chief to do everything and just, like, sits in their office and is mean to everybody. It's like, yeah, this mayor sucked and he was, like, an asshole. But he actually, like, he was part of the posse. He shot his gun and he helped drag the bodies out of the barn and actually did some stuff. And then,
yeah,
but yeah, his ending was very funny.
It was funny how open-minded and curious he was for somebody who came across as very closed off and, like, like, conservative. Like, he was like, I watch Animal Planet. I'm learned. I know things. Like, I'm just trying to figure this out just like you. But then he's also, like, swearing at his constituents and, you know, making gay jokes to the only queer character in the movie. It's just like, this man contains multitudes.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, that was actually maybe the most unbelievable part of this film, is that an elected official would in any way engage with reality. That was what was so difficult for me to believe. I was like, okay, now I know that this is a work of fiction.
Other than that, you're like, I'm watching a documentary. Wow, they got cool cool space footage.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What did you two think about those, like, kind of out of nowhere cuts into, like, straight CGI? Like, I thought it was so jarring, but it kind of worked out for the tone of this movie.
Give me an example.
The first one was when Brent initially gets infected by the alien, and you just see, like, a 3D x-ray of his body and, like, the little worm thing, like, USB chipping itself into his brain, and, like, yeah, it was like, what kind, what, what am I watching? This is so out of place. And then they showed it another time, I think. And then, like, when Kylie is about to get slugged and she's pulling it out, but she's, like, seeing flashes of, like,
where this alien
came from and, like, the memories that Grant had and all that stuff. It was, like, it felt out of place, but then because it was kind of, it worked for this movie. And then same with all those cuts, just cuts to black, and then bam, next scene.
Mm-hmm. It was, like, weirdly commercial. Like, it felt like it was maybe a made-for-TV movie with commercial breaks cut into it, and...
Yeah,
I think those didn't bother me so much because I could never really pin down what this movie was going for until it was just like, oh, this is just like zany fun. So I was like, okay, we get a little bit of like small town Americana. We got a cop who's like fed up with like his job and his town, and he's pining after like his high school sweetheart or whatever. And then we have like a really quick cut to like some body horror stuff. And then we have the weird X-ray, and then we have more like we have a guy hiding in the basement doing weird shit. So it's just like it never settled on anything for long enough for me to be like, this is what they were going for. Oh, this is what they're going for. Because it was just like, and now this thing, and now this thing, and then now this thing. And you're just like, so it didn't, for me, I can't speak for you, Luke, but it didn't phase me too much. I was just like, no. Sure. All right, movie.
Well, because, and this movie is a pastiche from the beginning. So, like, I guess the consistency of it is how it borrows from everything else. So to also have that, like, oh, here's a... X-ray, kind of.
Here's Predator. We got Predator.
Yeah. Oh, and also these human bodies incubate a species that can break out. So alien. Like, there's also.
There we go. Yeah.
Like, okay, so I don't know. It's just like, whatever. It'd be just when I think the tongue doesn't go any further in the cheek, James Gunn removes the cheek so the tongue can go even further into the cheek-like area that no longer exists.
That's perfect.
Removes the cheek and fills it with just a whole bunch of like sharp pointy teeth.
Yeah.
And the tongue just like keeps going.
Yeah, exactly.
But also it's a hive mind, so everybody's tongue goes into everybody's cheek. So it's a collective, like there's, if you added up all the tongues and cheeks, it would be like enough to circle the world or something.
Yeah.
I was going to say something. I don't remember. So I'm going to say something else now.
Okay. Mm. I love it.
The amount of, like, I know Grant is supposedly very wealthy because, like, you know, look at his house and all that stuff. But
got a pool.
The amount of meat that man bought, like, imagine. That's
a
like,
lot of meat.
That was a lot of meat. He bought 14 ribeyes. Granted, this was 2006, but, like, If it was now, he wouldn't have been able to buy that much. They're like, no, limit one per customer, please.
Right?
There's a supply chain shortage.
But it also felt like this was a small town, which maybe had like one grocery store. And so it looked like he had been like around the like county and just sort of like hit everywhere up to buy as much meat as he could. And then I thought he was going to be eating it, but I guess he was saving it for his like incubators to make all the little... worm babies. But yeah, so
I'm gonna go blow my nose. Keep talking.
Okay. So much rotting meat and so much like dead pets. Okay, I'm gonna go see what this cat's problem is. So Alex, you keep talking.
Alright, I'll just entertain myself.
What else we got? There's almost like not a lot to talk about this film unless we go by like scene by scene because it's really surface level. It's just like a horror movie pastiche, a weird slug monster, and lather, rinse, repeat.
I guess an additional acting thing I liked, like improbably this formula will work, is that because this movie's so absurd, it actually works better that Bill, aka Nathan Fillion's character, reacts to it in a way that's unrealistic, which is like pretty calm and like, okay. You know, like if there was an alien force attacking you, like A Quiet Place, you would act like those people. In A Quiet Place, which is like in fear all the time and very cautious and like certainly not cracking wisecracks all the time. And yet, like Nathan Fillion is almost like just kind of like, oh my God, okay, we gotta do this. Ugh, so annoying.
Well,
oh
Luke,
my God.
He is described as easygoing.
He has time in this car while like he's just seen all of his friends die to note that it's, in fact, not his bowel movement that plugged up his mother's toilet, but rather the roots. The root. Like, this is what's on your mind right now, is it? And
you're so focused on, like, salvaging your reputation. It's like, there are bigger problems.
Yeah. And yet still telling it in a way that he's like, it's half-hearted and kind of jokey. And I was like, okay, this only works because this movie isn't serious. So it would be silly for him to be serious about what's happening in this movie. So, like, I guess it's like two absurdities make a sanity, maybe? And so I liked that.
Yeah, it's just a matching of, like, tone of movie to tone of character. Because we've seen movies where it's like, who is this? What movie is this character supposed to be in? Because it's not the one he's currently in.
Yeah.
And this one, I think, yeah, if you take out the character and put Nathan Fillion's character in any other horror movie, he's maybe out of place because it's like, this guy is taking it far too cavalierly, the, you know, the issues going on around. But it works in this one.
Yeah, if you put really Frank worked. From Hellraiser in this movie, it doesn't work at all.
No, not at all.
So, I don't know, like, I enjoyed that. It just, it was so, like, I don't know. It consonated with itself really well.
Well, him also, but also, you know, also Elizabeth Banks. She is, like, a fantastic, like, she's got a great exasperation and sort of, like, a what's going on, what's happening. She's got amazing comedic timing and, like, the fact that it's studded with these, like, comedic all-stars and, you know, for as many of, like, horrible, terrible people Michael Rooker has played, he's also got some, like, pretty good comic chops and he knows who he is and who he's about. And so, like, it all works together to be, on the whole, like, funny as opposed to goofy and like, a misfire. Like, absolutely, it hits the mark.
And Elizabeth Banks has always been good at that kind of, like, naive sincerity or innocent sincerity in in her roles. Like, she's just nailed those kind of characters. And, like, maybe, like, acting, like a lot of the characters she's played, especially, like, early, I'm thinking 40-year-old virgin, she's in that. Like, she's played a few characters that are a lot dumber than she is in real life. And so she's really good at, and I think we've talked, I don't know, maybe I talked about this on Really True Fiction. It's No, I talked about it because we did the movie Being There, where Peter Sellers plays a simpleton. And I think it's probably harder to play someone dumber than you are in real life than someone smarter than you are in real life. Because, like, when Matt Damon is researching to be an astronaut for The Martian, like, there's things he can go check out. There's lingo he can learn. There's, there's, like, additions to his knowledge he can make. Or you know, whatever role someone has of a complicated occupation or place in the world that they don't have. But like, how do you forget things you know to act? Like, how do you lower your IQ? How do you not know the things you know in order to play a character? And I think that like, weirdly, it's a compliment to any actor or actress who can do that. And I think Elizabeth Banks, like, I've heard so many interviews with her where, like, she's clearly very, very intelligent. So to be able to play these kind of, like, what's going on, aw shucks kind of character is really impressive to me, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, she's just an all-star. Like, everything she's in is, like, I think there's a phrase, I'm probably going to butcher it wrong, but there's a phrase about actors who are, like, they're a 27 percenter, and it's, like, the addition of having this person in your movie improves it by 27%. That, you know, might not make it a great movie, but, like, whatever they're in improves it by, like, a significant amount. And, yeah, she does an amazing job in all the stuff she's in, like, no matter what, like, whether it's on 30 Rock and she's, like, kicking ass on there, or Role Models she's really good in, or this movie, like, hooray Elizabeth Banks.
I guess she's a lawyer in Role Models, so that blows my theory out a little bit, but
I don't really know what else to say about this movie, but I feel like we should talk a little bit more at least. what else you guys got any other stuff that occurred while watching it for you? Or
I feel like I'm repeating myself here, but just how reminiscent of so many other movies this movie is. At any given moment, again, the way that Kylie's family walks around reminds me of The Crazies. And the kind of, like, zombies coming across the field, there's just, like, you've seen that in so many zombie movies. And
Night of the Living Dead being one.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it just, it almost, it did feel a little bit like James Gunn said, how many other movies can we reference in this movie? We want the record.
We want them all. Yeah, even at the very end, she's in that white, like, slip or camisole or whatever, and it's covered in blood, and it's very much like at the end of Carrie, kind of gave me those vibes, just like this, like, symbol of purity and beauty is like covered in gore.
And she hides the sharp object in her like underwear. And so it's like a weapon when you don't expect someone to. And like, I can't even think, like, but like, there's lots of movies like that.
Okay, I wanted to ask you, Luke, you said in the top of the episode that Eight-Legged Freaks was kind of the top tier of the creature feature campy movie. So where does Slither rank compared to Eight-Legged Freaks? Is Eight-Legged Freaks still the pinnacle?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Slither is certainly deserving to be in the conversation with Eight-Legged Freaks. Like, it's they're like basically the same movie. I think Freaks just has the advantage for me because I watched it like as a teenager when it came out. I think it came out in like 2003.
Okay.
And so, apropos of, I guess, a recently released MCU movie, but there's just like, it still has, it takes the cake for me in the dumbest funny line of a movie I've ever seen, where they're like gathering at the community center, all the survivors, and there's these huge spiders like chasing them, like massive, massive spiders, like three times bigger than their cars. Maybe not quite that big, but like pretty big, right? And one of the kids is like, "What is that?" And the guy looks at him and says, "It's a spider, man." I can't, that's the undefeated, stupid, funny line from a movie, because it's just like, it's just, it, like, fuck off.
Yeah, fuck off, but, movie.
So, like, there wasn't a line, maybe here's Alpha, there wasn't a line in Slither that was that funny, both from, like, a stupid and pulp culture reference. Like, if I were writing this movie, here's the little addition, there would have been a character named Jim, and you could have been like, what are these? Like, well, it's not an earthworm, Jim. That kind of, like, it needed a line like that, right? Like, that kind of thing.
Wow. Yes, yeah. It needed a groan-inducing, like, friendship-ending level joke.
Yeah. So, if Eight-Legged Freaks is 100 on the stupid but I love it scale, Slither's, you know, probably, like, 95 or 97. So, they're close.
Oh, nice. I have to also give this movie props for the best Chekhov's fake-out with the grenade, where we see it in the very start of the movie. He's like, check it out, we confiscated this grenade from somebody who was trying to use it to trout fish. Okay, that's all you get. There's a grenade in the police locker, and then they set it up to be like, it's going to be used, only to have it get knocked into the pool and explode underwater and be like a weak, pitiful explosion too.
I was expecting fish to like surface from that pool after that explosion. Like, that's how, that's like this movie to me is, I was expecting the dumbest of the, like, of course this would happen, but it didn't. It showed a little bit of restraint.
Well,
showed just enough restraint.
As we see, Michael Rooker obviously being annoying and the villain of this movie, but we turned out that an amateur pain cannot defeat a pro pain.
You're a pro pain in my ass, Luke. I'll tell you what.
Well, as long as I'm not a pro pain in your window. That joke is appropriate for this movie. You know what? Honestly, and like, this is the kind of movie that I think my sense of humor would have enjoyed being like a co-writer on. Do you know what I mean? I would have, this is the kind of movie that I think if the three of us wrote a movie, it'd be something like this. If we're going all in on a stupid pop culture movie, it'd be like this with maybe a few more puns in it, I think.
Mm-hmm. I found particular enjoyment in the Chinese joke at the start.
Okay.
Yeah. Was that Johnny Knees?
I was wondering.
What?
I think it was like Johnny. So it was like Johnny Knees. Was it Chinese?
Chinese? Yeah. It was like, it's because she got a Gina. And then the kid goes, What's a Gina? It's a place. It's from
Chinese. Yeah. Yeah.
That was a real skated by the line where I was just like, ooh, that's a line. That's a choice.
What's that? Okay, what's that movie with Steve Martin and I think it's Queen Latifah? Do you remember that movie?
What's Taxi? That movie? No, wait, that was a
Jimmy Fallon.
No, no. There was a comedy from like the early 2000s with Steve Martin and I'm pretty sure it was Queen Latifah, and it was like two worlds collide for like a family situation. And I think Steve Martin's kid is like reading a magazine and he's like, what's Iraq? and then Steve Martin's like, it's a country in the Middle East. So
it was the 2003 comedy / rom-com. So comedy / romantic comedy.
Yeah.
Bringing Down the House.
There it is. Yeah. And so, yeah, that
it's got Eugene Levy in it.
Yeah. Another movie that this movie reminds me of.
The only thing that, like, I was like, why is this in here? Was the addition of a queer character only to kill the queer character, which is, I guess, if I have to pick something in the negative, it was just like, okay, you made one of your police officers a queer character. That's cool. But then, you know,
oh, really?
They just die. And there's no reason on the...
Which one was the queer character?
The lady cop.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Why he's like, you would have married him too if he had a gina, as in vagina, as in she's a big lesbian.
I missed
and
that.
And then the kid is like, what's a gina?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So, and that's why he's like, the mayor even says later, it's like, we shouldn't be having to put up with this shit. I don't care if you're a lesbo, you should have the same rights as everyone. I was just like, weird choice. Weird.
It's the South Dakotan progressiveness in him, right?
Well,
South Carolina.
Is it Dakota? Yeah. South Carolina.
This movie was from 2006, yes?
Yeah,
I think
it was.
Right? And when was the Marriage Equality Act passed? Like 2015, I think? So
a little too late,
yeah,
right?
In America, it was. It was
right.
In Canada for a
well,
while,
but, I mean, yeah. I mean, I guess this just being an American film, like, there are... this is just how history works often, is like, there are things that are, like, kind of offensively obvious to us now that, at the time, were... actually progressive in a weird way, you know, so
yeah. If you read
Huckleberry Finn now, if you read Huckleberry Finn now, you're looking at like a white kid wrestling with his idea of whether or not he thinks Jim is a person, right?
Yeah.
Like if you think about that in contemporary terms, you could not be more offensive and like backwards, but like that book being written in 1885, like that's just the sensibility of the kind of culture of the time. So it is just funny, like having something like that be like not the point of a movie. So it's just interesting that it's in there. I don't know.
It's funny because there is a trope and it's in horror movie. And I've done like a little bit of reading on it about the, like the order of people who die in horror movies. Like there's the comedy, or not the comedy, that's the wrong way to phrase it, but the trope of like, oh, the black person dies first, right? Like there's that trope in horror slasher movies. And then it's usually the queer coded character is the second or third person to die. Mm. And so the fact that they have that in there, I'd love to give James Gunn the credit of like having a character to like fit in a trope in a movie that is so tropey, but it was still a little bit of like, a more cynical reading could be like, look, we're being progressive. We put a gay in your movie. Don't you like us? Like, aren't we being so progressive? And like, there's both ways to look at it. And I don't mean to like soapbox about it. And I wasn't like offended by it, but I was just like, I noticed it and it stuck out to me. So.
Well, she lived a little longer than like all the other cops.
She did. Yeah.
For whatever that's worth.
Acid face. so bad.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That'd be a terrible way to go.
Well, it was so bad. Yeah, but overall, on the whole, this thing was a fun movie, and I like that they, you know, they did explode him at the end. It was a propane tank that got him, and Nathan Fillion was saved because you needed to get stabbed with both tentacles in order to become a worm god or whatever.
Yeah. Did any of that stuff remind the two of you of tentacle porn? Maybe that was like the...
Oh, Tentai, right?
I've read articles. I don't know.
Which articles?
What's tentacle porn? My mom listens to this podcast. I've never looked at porn, Mom. Don't worry.
Ah, yes. Pornography? Am I pronouncing that correctly? No.
That's right.
It was like, I think you mentioned, did you say manga earlier? Like,
yes, a manga.
There was a lot of like tentacle in a sexual sense in a lot of this movie.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't want to be indelicate. So I will note that that's interesting. I think
it's definitely, I think a feature of the movie is like a reference to these sort of these gross things. And even the scene when he's like impregnating Brenda with his tentacles, it's not, in like her genitals, like it's going through her stomach, right. And it's not his penis, it's like coming out of his stomach, so it's like not the sex organs of the humans involved, but it's still played in that very weird sort of sexual scene, like she's writhing around and he's writhing around and moaning, and it's just like, oh, okay, like it's a sex scene without it, without them having sex.
And I wonder if this is also because even in the early and mid 2000s there was still a kind of like conservative censorship around these kind of movies or these kind of things, is like those are like they enter through your mouth in a wiggly manner, like it's very like suggestive.
It's very phallic. It's very
right?
phallic.
Yeah, very phallic through the oral cavity.
Yeah, it looked like a dick going in the mouth.
Yeah, thank you, Alex. I think if you tried to like talk about this movie without or with being like, no, I don't think there's any sexual undertones in that movie, then you watched the movie wrong. Like, there's no wrong way to watch a movie, but you watched the movie wrong, friend. Yeah, so. It was gross.
Evil space parasite needed to go to horny jail.
Yeah, well, no, I think probably this movie is a metaphor for safe sex, contraception, and being safe about it, because otherwise you could get a worm tentacle hive mind out of it.
Yeah, we don't want that. There's consequences to sex. I mean, if we're mining this movie for like reason and sort of like subtext, which I feel like there's more text than there is subtext in this movie, but like the idea of, oh shoot, what's Elizabeth Banks' character? Skylar?
Starla.
No. Starla. Skylar is Walter White's character, which is or wife, which Michael Rooker looked a lot like Walter White. Anyway.
So
Starla, the idea that she's in this marriage, that he's not the best husband. He's like, he takes a long time to like listen to her not consenting at the start, and he's sort of fooling around on her. And then, the idea that she's like trapped in this marriage, and the idea then that he is now everybody in town, sort of like, you know, the idea of having an abusive partner that is everywhere and there's no way to escape it is, I picked up on that, and whether or not James Gunn put it in the movie but or not, it was something that I parsed from it.
You know what I parsed from this movie? When Starla, she's like, hey, we gotta be there in 40 minutes. I'm gonna take a shower now. I'm like, no fucking shot are you doing this now. You should have done this like an hour ago.
Thank you, Alex. I wrote that note in my book because I was like, this movie was definitely written by a man, because there is no way 40 minutes is enough time to get ready.
Or maybe it was like done on purpose, because you could see that, you know, Grant, Michael Rooker's character Grant, is already, he's like fully dressed, he's ready to go, he's buttoning up his shirt, and she's like, hey, we got to be there in 40 minutes, I'm going to start my shower now.
Yeah.
That was a nice little thing.
The most overdressed for something called a deer cheer that I think I could imagine being, which I gather was the start of hunting season, and she's in like this very, very like nice dress with her hair up and like her best jewelry on, and it's like, I don't think this is the appropriate, I mean, wear whatever you want to wherever you want, but like that's not the mode of this.
It's like when Michael tells, can't remember her name in the show, but it's like the woman who's his wife in real life. Carol, maybe, is her character in the show. He tells, they're going to like a Diwali party with Kelly's family in the office.
Oh, right.
And he tells her it's a
cheerleader.
He tells her it's a costume party. Yeah. So she's dressed as a cheerleader.
You said it was a costume party. Yeah.
Yeah, so good. So yeah, like not exactly the same, but Elizabeth Banks definitely stood out in that environment.
Consider they're all square dancing, they're singing about fucking deer season, and wearing like Christmas antlers on their head. It was like, okay, this
although
is not
I'll put it I'll put it to you this way, I definitely felt affiliated, or I might say affilionated, with Nathan Fillion when his character said, I'll just never understand the rush of shooting a cute deer with a gun kind of thing. And I was like, yeah, I don't really feel that either. So
it's for the food.
Yeah, no, I obviously have to, like, cop to the fact that I would eat it if it was dead. I do eat meat, which is usually dead. So, I guess for survival,
usually.
I would.
Yeah.
But it's just a different thing if it's... I totally get why people recreationally like to do it, especially people who use the whole animal. And maybe if I was there, I would go. I related, like, all of that other stuff aside, I related to that sentiment of, like, I just don't get the rush.
Well, there's, like, and that's a very typical character in these types of movies, is, like, you know, they don't go along with everybody else in the town. They have a different sense of, like, sensibility. And it's like,
yeah,
you know, we've seen that all from, like, fish out of water, high school, you know, movies, loner kid doesn't fit in, till, you know, just like resentful grown up who doesn't want to go along. And it's, I think, a clever character beat by having him, like, he's not going along with what the crowd does. He doesn't get into it. And then also at the end, he's not part of the crowd of, like, mindless zombies. And, like, that's just, like, academic way to put a spin on it without doing it in such an obvious way, even though, again, this movie is just all text.
Yeah.
There's not much parsing in it. But, yeah, Nathan Fillion, just, he's so good. He's so good in this movie. 2006 was, like, the best Nathan Fillion time. And I want to see him in more things, please.
I'd love to see him, because he's in a show now called The Rookie. I'd love to see him in the biography of Michael Rooker, and he could be the Rooker.
Well, Michael Rooker would be the Rooker. Or you think Nathan Fillion would play
Nathan
Michael
Fillion
Rooker.
Playing Michael Rooker in the bio film The Rooker. And it's a crossover with The Rookie. The Rookery.
Settle down, Ned Stark. All right. Rookeries where ravens live. Anyway, okay.
I guess I gotta eat crow now.
Yum, yum, yum. Oh, all right, God. Do we have anything else? Final thoughts on Slither, this movie, before we rate it? Alex, last thoughts?
No, I'm good.
No? Luke, last thoughts?
In a very different way, I feel like this movie is in the same kind of, like, spiritual family as Scream, which is...
Okay.
I think Scream is a better movie than Slither because of its narrative, but this is just, again, like a love letter to people who like horror and like these actors and actresses, not even just characters. So it's like a very self-aware film in that way. And I guess I like that it did that, right? Like, James Gunn made a movie for a particular audience almost as much as, like, for a particular story. And I don't like those movies all the time. I wouldn't want that to be the only kind of movie, because I like original stories, and I think I like original stories a little bit more than this kind. But this kind of movie done well is very, very delicious and enjoyable.
Yeah, and I will add on to that thought, because we've spoken about it before, but I think this is one that we have now done in the run of the show where we can appreciate it more than if we had done it in the first 6 months of doing the show, like, knowing the subtext and knowing the history behind these movies and seeing enough of them to get the jokes is part of what's in. So if Slither is your first horror movie, watch some more and then come back to it, because it's, I think it would age with more context and it would age well.
If this was like a first 10 episode for us, my analysis would be way more straightforward, which would be missing the point of this movie. So,
and we would be going through the plot in order.
we
would have, yes. All right, well, I think we should pick a scariest part then. The subtle jump scares still get, not a subtle jump scare, there's no such thing as a subtle jump scare, but the jump scare where she's going down into the basement the first time and the dead pet, like,
yeah,
you know, falls in front of her, got me. So I'm picking that one. That gave me the biggest, like, jump reaction. So that's my pick. Alex.
This was not a scary movie. I think I will I will honestly say that nothing in this movie scared me. So I'll talk about the grossest thing and the coolest grossest thing.
Ooh, okay.
So the grossest thing was when you see the back of Grant kind of just sticking out of the front of the house, and it's just a blob, and then you see people, like, blobbing into him and, like, disrobing, and then you see, like, old blobby butt kind of just, like, dissolving slowly into the big blob. That was the grossest part of the movie. And then the grossest, coolest part of the movie for me was when they confront Grant in the field after he kills the cow, and there's that guy pointing the gun at him, and then he tentacles out, and it's a very, like, subtle cut that goes vertically down the guy's face, like, from his forehead all the way down, and then you see his eyes roll in and look, like, try to look at the cut, and then he just slowly splits open. I thought that was really cool, and I really liked that. That was a good effect.
Speaking of, like, homages from manga and, like, anime and stuff, like, that's a very common thing of, like, the cut is so fast that it takes a few seconds before you realize you're dead, and then you fall into pieces. Like, yeah, that was very gross and very cool. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you just mentioning that, Alex, made me remember that Elizabeth Banks was in a movie called Zack and Miri Make a Porno, and I feel like maybe there's a cut of this movie that's a prequel to that called Grant and Grant and Grant and Grant Make a Blobby Orgy.
Yeah.
Luke, come on, please give him his full name. It's Grant Grant and Grant Grant and Grant Grant and Grant Grant Make a Blobby Orgy.
Sorry. My mistake. Well, they had lots to slather themselves with in that orgy.
Yeah. All right, so what's your scariest part?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Alex. This is not a scary movie, so I'm going to give the disgustingest part of the movie.
Okay.
And to me, the disgustingest part had to be the kind of like whole scene of finding Sphere Brenda that then becomes exploding red worm Brenda. Like, it was just like,
that was gross.
It wasn't even like, it's just like, it felt inside of my skin gross. I was like,
yeah. Ugh. And then just the context of all the blood around her mouth being like from just ripped up dead animals. And yeah, that was.
It was be like, okay, let's make Jabba the Hutt, but 10 times more disgusting. No.
Right?
100 like times bastard. More disgusting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like Fat Bastard.
It was gross.
I don't know how to think about that kind of thing.
It's very fantastical and like out of this world. And yeah, so it was fun though.
Do you think that was a practical effect or a CGI effect? Like, do you think they built the blob and then just
I think probably it was a green screen blob, but like there was enough of like Brenda around, like maybe sticking her face through the green screen, and then they just like, you know, computer generated it over top. But I think there was some sort of prosthetic where she had to like be mounted up into a wall with just her face sticking out and being like, I didn't want anybody to see me like this. It's like, okay, we gotta get you to a hospital. What the fuck is a hospital gonna do?
yeah
it was gross. All right, so rating section, what are we gonna give this one? I there's only one option to rate it out of, and it's ineffective grenades. So I thought this movie was so much fun. There was a second of me being like, am I gonna hate this movie? And then it's just like, no, Billy, you're gonna love this movie because it is so silly. And so I would love to give this movie, and I think you'll permit me, I would love to give this movie a 4 ineffective grenades out of 5.
Nice.
Go ahead, Alex.
This was a really, really fun movie. I enjoyed watching it. There's honestly not, like, there wasn't that much really to talk about of, like, substance, but that's kind of, like, I think that's what is really cool about this movie is, like, I watched it, I had a ton of fun, and it's exactly what it intended to be, and it didn't try to be something it wasn't. And, yeah, the leads were great, and it's something that I think I would have even more fun watching with other people. So
gosh, this would have been a perfect movie for the three of us to watch together.
Yeah.
It would have been so good.
So yeah, I too am gonna give this a 4 ineffective grenades out of 5.
Alrighty.
Yeah, this movie is like internally perfect. It hits every mark that it sets for itself, and it's like a perfectly enclosed system. So the only reason it's not going to get a 5 out of 5 score is just because the nature of original storytelling I like more than self-referential storytelling, which is fine. You know, it's just my kind of like exploratory curiosity likes the new thing as opposed to, I like both, but the new thing I like a little bit more. So this is going to be an across the board 4 out of 5 ineffective grenades. Out of 5, just because this movie was a total good time.
Right.
But I still maintain might be the least scary movie we've done thus far on the podcast.
Even less scary than Tremors, though? Like, Tremors is up
less
there.
Scary than The Lighthouse? Lighthouse was
not Lighthouse
scary.
Was like,
it was protein.
Yeah, but it was like, The Lighthouse unnerved me a lot more than this movie
did.
Sure.
Yeah, I guess, maybe this movie and Tremors and maybe Leprechaun. I don't know. We should do...
Leprechaun was horrifying in its own way.
Yeah, but it was the existence of Leprechaun that was the true horror of That might be fun. That could be like we do a list of our top five scariest and least scary movies we've done thus far. That could be a fun bonus. Ooh.
Well, we should think of stuff like that. The 100th episode is approaching, yeah. And might be good to do some bonus stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah, so a 4 out of 5 for you. Very fun. I'm glad they never made a sequel, even though there's like a, I guess, a post-credit sting where a cat gets infected and there's like, there's room for it to happen. I think you can't make a sequel to this movie and make it good. I don't think it's possible. I mean, it's not impossible, but I don't think it's probable. I think that if a sequel were made, it would definitely not have James Gunn behind it, and it wouldn't have any of the actors returning. And so you leave one of those ingredients out of the stew and you get a inferior product. So I'm on team. Don't make remake Slither or make a sequel to Slither. I don't care who knows. Alrighty, well, that's going to wrap it up. My episode for birthday month is in the bag, and we got to cheer something. So I'm going to pick an easy one right across the line. I'm cheering the fact that at the time of recording, I saw Spider-Man No Way Home, and that movie was so much fun. I cried more than one time, and I laughed even more than that. So plain and simple, Spider-Man Far From Home, or No Way Home, whichever one it was. It was great. Mwah. Chef's kiss. Alex, what are you cheering?
I also saw Spider-Man, and it was good, but that's not going to be my cheer. My cheer is the possibility of seeing live music of bands and artists that I really like. So I say possibility because at any time, anything could be canceled. But right. I have 3 shows lined up for 2022, and I got tickets for them all in the span of like a few weeks. So that's kind of exciting. So I'm looking forward to those possibilities coming in the new year.
Mm-hmm. Nice. All right, Luke, what are you cheering?
Yeah, I don't actually... I had a few things floating around my mind, but we talked about it a little bit off recording, but I'm going to cheer a movie I watched this weekend called Mississippi Burning. First one, first time I've seen it. It's from 1988. Gene Hackman, Willem Dafoe, and it's a retelling of a true story from 1964 of FBI agents having to go to Mississippi to investigate the disappearance of 3 civil rights activists, because now this is a federal law. It's federal police that are involved, and just the kind of like, I think they'd make it like even more intricate now, but like for a late 80s film, it's pretty intricate in a very fraught and complicated and horrifying subject matter that if you're going to make a movie about it, you better do it right. And it just was really good. It was really like impactful and entertaining, and Gene Hackman was great. And I just really enjoyed it. It's got like this really intense theme song that plays throughout it. So it fit really well. So I would suggest anyone who wants an intense movie, but a good one, watch Mississippi Burning.
I will attest to that. Cheers. It is fantastic.
Nice. I should check it out. What is it on? Is it on anything?
Yeah, I watched it
on the TV.
Prime. Amazon Prime. Well, actually, it was on the laptop.
Can I watch it on my phone? Yes, on Prime.
I suppose so, yeah, if you have the app.
Yep. All right, well, thanks. Thanks so much, and thanks for joining me again. Let's wrap the show up. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. If you'd like to support the show, the easiest and cheapest way for you to do that is to just tell your friends about it. Tell friends, coworkers, enemies, bystanders. Don't tell bystanders. Don't bother people on that you don't know. But let people know that they should listen to Nothing Fear. It's a fun show, and... if you would like to leave us a rating or a review, you can do that as well on your downloading pod app of choice. You can also support us financially by joining our Patreon, Nothing to Fear, or patreon.com/nothingtofear, or you can go to tpublic.com/nothingtofear to grab some t-shirts. And, you know, I would love it if you said hello to me on the social media feeds that I run. Nothing to Fear podcast is the Instagram. NTFpod is on Twitter. You can follow me on my Instagram at BillyByDesign. I before you in spelling Billy, and there are underscores between the words. And if you're done listening to all the Nothing to Fear episodes, and you've caught up, and you've joined the Patreon, and you've done left a review, and you're still wondering, where can I hear more of these hosts? You can hear all three of us on a couple episodes of Luke's podcasts, which are...
Yeah, you can listen to Really True Fiction. And every episode of that one, my cousin and I talk about a famous book, movie, or TV show for the real life ideas in it. And Billy joined us to talk about The Stand, the Stephen King novel. And Alex joined us to talk about Prisoner of Azkaban. Plus, you can find all three of us on, I believe it's episode 14 of The Liberal Soul. May the Force be with you. Talking about Star Wars. So Really True Fiction and The Liberal Soul are podcasts you can listen to that have semi-regular new episodes.
Yes, check those out. And then when you're done all of that, you've listened to all of Really True Fiction and all of Liberal Soul, and you're still like, where can I find Alex Wan? Where can they do that?
You can find me in the exploding remains of the grenade in the pool. Aww. It's all gone. It's all gone. Somewhere down there. But I occasionally will post on the Patreon, so you can check me out there.
Yeah. Sweet. All right, well, that'll wrap us up for another week.
Hey,
and
I have a question.
Before we go... Oh, okay, question. We got a question. Late question. So I'll allow it.
Which of you two would you say is our Patreon saint?
I'm about to Patreon saint you in the nuts if you keep this up.
Wow.
Well.
So it's me. It's me, obviously.
I don't want to be a Patreon saint.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I have to perform two Patreon miracles, and it has to be confirmed by the Patreon Council of something
it.
Before we
got
can
it.
Be Patreon saints.
Got it. I understand.
Okay. All right. Did all of that get cut? Probably. But maybe I'll release it. Okay. Anyway, enough shenanigans. We got to pick a movie for next week, and it's Alex's birthday. So everyone say happy birthday, Alex, and then he's going to tell us what movie we're going to pick.
All right.
We're going to watch.
I was thinking, you know, some horror, some mystery. So next week we're going to
watch. That's interesting.
2002's Scooby-Doo.
Oh, yes!
No, I'm just kidding. We're not going to watch that. Next week we're going to watch 2020's The Invisible Man.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yes. Oh, okay. With Elizabeth Moss?
Yeah.
Yes.
Ooh, yeah. Okay.
That's
okay.
The one.
I'm excited for that. I was searching for a way to find a theme to pick Invisible Man, but yeah, good call, Alex. I can't wait for that one.
So will we see anybody? Who knows? I don't know.
Is the movie, maybe this is something we can talk about next time, but is the movie based on the short story or the novel? I can't remember. If
it's inspired by the novel of the same name by H.G. Wells.
Cool.
But it is contemporary, I believe.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, so next week, we'll be back for our birthday episode. And until then, folks... Wish us Hal happy birthday on social media, and remember, they're just movies. There's nothing to fear. But yeah,
I'm gonna go blow my nose. Keep talking.
Okay, so much rotting meat and so much like dead pets. Okay, I'm gonna go see what this cat's problem is. So, Alex, you keep talking.
All right, I'll just entertain myself. Nobody look.
Wesley, lie down. Hey. Prime content. It's weird having a 5-month-old kitten in the apartment because he's just like a weird floppy baby most of the time, and then sometimes he will
tons of
just,
energy.
Yeah, sometimes he'll just like launch from the couch to the cat tower and then like jump on Cat Jon Snow, who is like too old for his bullshit. And they often are like 11:30 at night is the best time for us to play wrestle and like growl and hiss at each other. So. Yay, pet ownership.
Well, at least you're owning your pet in Montreal and not Wheelsy, South Carolina.
Mm. That's true, yeah. Yeah, that would be no good.
No good.
No good for Mr. Cat Jon Snow and Wesley.